Chapter 1. Drop 1. Drop the flame. Pause. Quote, "Something has dropped in the water, in the river. You cannot see the thing drop within the water by agitating the water. Just stand still for some time. As soon as the water is settled up, you'll see the things as they are. So as soon as our enthusiasm is agitated, it is better to sit down in any temple suitable and chant Hare Krishna. There is no question of being disappointed. After all, we commit so many mistakes. That is human nature. To err is human. That is not fault. But try to rectify with a cool head." Lecture, Nectar of Devotion, Calcutta, 27/1, 1973. Drop the flame simply means to pause. It sounds quite easy, doesn't it? Just pause. Think amber traffic lights. It also acts as a prelude to stop, like at a red light. The trouble with pausing is that it can be deceptively difficult. We all know that once you get started, it can be really hard to stop. Remember Newton's law of motion, really Krishna's law? Every object in a state of uniform motion tends to remain in that state of motion unless an external force is applied to it. This definition reminds me of something my good old Australian mum used to say, "Just don't get me started." We five kids knew what that meant. It was a warning. If you make mum mad, you could be in for it, which translates as you better stop it or you'll get what we used to call an ear bashing. Ear bashing, as interpreted by Cambridge Dictionary online, is slang for angry words spoken to someone who has done something wrong. So, back to pause. Quote, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit better than he who captures a city." Proverbs 16:32. In the context of resolving relationship conflicts, to pause is certainly golden. Have you ever found yourself just about to slide down the precarious slopes of a conflict thinking, "Danger, danger, I've been here before. I know if I say what I really want to say, we'll end up going down that same old road together. It won't be pretty, but I need to be heard. Oh, who cares anyway?" You throw caution to the wind and dive headlong into an ever-escalating conflict that you just can't put the brakes on.
First, become conscious. In the five-drop remedy process, pause emerges first, and for good reason. Once you understand the fundamental value of this drop, you will become motivated to use it. Simply put, it means understanding that when you lose it, you really do lose it. You lose your temper, your dignity, and your self-respect. Lastly, and not insignificantly, you really do lose the argument. As Dale Carnegie so aptly noted in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, quote, "A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still." Srila Prabhupada often reminded us that we first need to become conscious before we can become Krishna conscious. Awareness is the first step. Once you are conscious or aware, you are more likely to choose the right action. We have all heard a million times that the mode of passion ends in distress. We have not only heard it, but we have also experienced it, probably more often than we would like to admit. Anger is a symptom of the mode of passion and ignorance that is born from false ego and is dangerous on the path of bhakti. Often described in a variety of heat-related terms like blazing, explosive, or burning, anger has the innate power to destroy. Srila Prabhupada describes anger's effects perfectly in his Bhagavad Gita as it is purport. Quote, "Akrodha means to check anger. Even if there is provocation, one should be tolerant, for once one becomes angry, his whole body becomes polluted. Anger is a product of the mode of passion and lust, so one who is transcendentally situated should check himself from anger." Bhagavad Gita 16:1. Of course, we know there exists another type of anger termed transcendental anger. The This is the anger Hanuman displayed when he set fire to Ravana's city, Lanka. But let's not kid ourselves here. Our anger is usually far from the transcendental kind. It is right up there along with lust and greed as one of the foremost enemies on the spiritual path. Aristotle puts it nicely. Anyone can become angry. That is easy. But to be angry with the right person at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that is not within everyone's power, and that is not easy. Aristotle, ancient Greek philosopher.
Triggers and patterns. The beginning of any conflict is a critical point. We can either diffuse it or feed it, thus causing it to quickly dissolve or to escalate wildly. This is the crucial moment when your buttons or triggers have been activated and you're ready to respond, all too often in a way that doesn't serve you or anyone else very well. Now, we all have triggers that set us off. What my husband and I have discovered in our relationship is that these triggers often indicate patterns that we have developed and cemented over time. Every relationship has patterns. Patterns are not intrinsically negative. In fact, lots of them are positive and nurturing. Some, however, are undesirable and can be damaging. Sadly, we plod along for years acting out these dysfunctional patterns while naively wondering why our life is so marred by conflict and strife. Let me share a relevant example, our map problem. My husband and I played this ridiculous pattern for over 15 years before we finally had the good sense to pause and examine what was really going on. Life was not always fun when we went somewhere new. There was this expectation that I should be the one to navigate while my husband did the driving. I was a lousy navigator and I knew it, somewhere deep down. I'm one of those spatially challenged people who has to turn maps upside down to make sense of them. Our pattern was that we would start out hopeful. Maybe this time it will work. However, I soon became tense and my husband often exasperated when I couldn't get the directions right. This inevitably led us into an attack-defend mode. Then one day, as we headed down that old familiar path of conflict, we had the good sense to pause. Hey, this is not working. In fact, it has never worked. Why are we doing this to ourselves? There are a myriad of issues that can trigger conflict patterns. Often they revolve around genuine but sensitive concerns in areas such as spiritual standards like, do we eat in restaurants? Or role expectations like, who puts the kids to bed, etc. On their own, these issues may seem minor, even insignificant, and that is why we hesitate to even bother dealing with them. If left unresolved, however, they pile up, surfacing time and time again, just begging to be addressed and laid to rest. Dealing with patterns. What's your style? Until we achieve transcendence, social conditioning from our past tends to dictate how we deal with our conflict patterns. How we react in these situations can often be traced back to what was modeled by our parents. Even though we swear through our clenched teeth that we will never act like our father or mother, when we don't have alternative methods, we may unconsciously revert to past conditioning. For example, in your home, the following strategies for dealing with conflict could have been avoidance, suppression, just keep the peace at any cost, clam up, give the silent treatment, or as a last resort, cry. Now, avoidance and suppression were prevalent in my childhood home. We all learnt to keep the peace to pacify a very explosive father. The clear but unspoken mantra was, don't do anything to make Dad mad. Confrontation, combat. Perhaps this was the trend in your childhood. Maybe in your house it was normal to argue your point, fight it out, shout, rave, or scream, etc. Can you see how we often unconsciously bring our baggage with us without considering if it really serves us or not? When we think about it, our responses to conflict are nearly always protective in nature. Regardless of our conflict style, we are either attacking or defending our position or point of view. The problem with this instinctive preservation strategy is that nobody wins. You accuse me, I defend. Then I accuse you and you defend even more passionately. So it goes round and round, on and on.
The price of anger. Why we lose so much when we lose it. Yudhisthira Maharaj explains to Queen Draupadi in the epic Mahabharata, quote, "Only fools praise anger, considering it equivalent to energy. The wise keep anger at a distance. The man consumed by anger does not easily acquire generosity, dignity, courage, skill, or the other attributes possessed by men of character. The wise consider him a man of character who restrains his wrath." Mahabharata 1:24, Krishna Dharma Das. Dysfunctional behaviors repeated over time compound into habits. The habit of dancing with anger is both dangerous and insidious. It effectively breaks down trust and eventually bankrupts our relationships.
Calm is strength. A valuable mantra I learnt in a classroom management course, which immediately resonated with me, and has also served me well in many other areas of life, is calm is strength. Have you ever noticed that as soon as you get angry, the other person stops focusing on the issue or problem at hand and begins to focus on and react to your anger? By getting upset, you lose your power. By remaining calm, you keep your power as well as the respect of others. By remaining calm, you also keep the focus on the real issue. Now, this is big, really big. Please don't underestimate this principle. Once you understand it fully, it acts as a prime motivator that propels you into pause and inspires you to keep your cool. I have memories of losing my power when dealing with my own kids. I would be angrily raving away about something trivial, sounding very much like my own dear mother. Then I would notice my kids' faces, expressions of awful fascination mixed with a little fear. Sometimes there was even a hint of a defiant smile. It was like they knew that they had won the battle when Mum went slightly ballistic. Yes, and I can see that it must have been weirdly amusing watching their usually serene mother acting like a two-year-old having a tantrum. On my side of the fence, initially it felt great to release it and let it all out. But as soon as I regained some semblance of calm, I was flooded with a mixture of guilt, shame, and remorse. I truly felt like the evil witch. This is definitely a typical indicator of the effects of the mode of passion. Feels good in the beginning, ends in suffering. My children reacted to my anger according to their individual natures. My son, quiet and stubborn, would storm out without a word. My daughter, expressive and emotional, would match my anger with hers. Later, I would apologize for my outburst. After all, I was supposed to be the adult. I didn't want to set a bad example. Of course, this reflection was to my credit, but the issue itself, however important, was lost. At least for the moment. I had surrendered my power because I had lost my temper.
Don't be a source of dread. I first learned the concepts of nonviolence in my marriage. Mahatma Gandhi. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Swayambhuva Manu advises his grandson Dhruva Maharaj to give up his anger and stop killing the yakshas who had killed his brother. He told Dhruva, quote, "A person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger, because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others." Srimad Bhagavatam 4:11-32. Our angry patterns often transform us into sources of dread for others. This brings only guilt and shame. It powerfully illustrates the need to learn to pause, to change our state and remain calm.
The Calm is Strength mantra in action. Keeping calm, even under provocation, is a symptom of our ascending to the human platform. Srila Prabhupada constantly reminds us to become dhira, sober and gentle. Quote, so dhiranam vatma, because people must be first of all gentle, then talk of Krishna and God consciousness. If he is an animal, what can he understand? This is Vedic system. Dhiranam. Dhira means must be gentle, perfectly gentle. Srimad Bhagavatam Lecture 1313, Los Angeles, September 18, 1972. In our personal relationship dynamic, my husband is often the more emotionally expressive one. I am the quiet, stubborn type that always tries to avoid conflict and would much prefer to retreat into stony silence. While I had been working on how to express myself, my husband had also been working on practicing calm as strength. Have you ever noticed that whenever you work on improving yourself, Krishna tends to test you? Enter conflict. I cannot honestly remember what it was all about, which is a lesson in itself. However, I do remember that we were both upset and that I had defaulted to my habitual silent treatment strategy. At this point, I was fully expecting my husband to get expressive, but to my surprise, instead of letting me know just how angry he was, he walked calmly out the door. If he had left in anger, I would have focused on his angry state and felt even more justified in my stance. His leaving in this calm, unenergized manner afforded me space to ponder my part in the disagreement. What had I done that had contributed to the conflict? After a while, I even became a little anxious. Where had he gone? I hoped he wasn't too upset. My husband was only gone for an hour, but by the time he had returned, I had entered into a more reflective and rational place. I was ready to listen to him, and even ready to apologize for my part in the misunderstanding. In accordance with our golden rule, we still worked through the issue, whatever it was, to the end, but now without raised voices or anger. Afterwards, we discussed and confirmed the realization that practicing calm as strength was a huge piece in solving the conflict puzzle. I did not lose respect for my husband when he walked out of the argument to protect his composure. On the contrary, I admired and respected him for it.
When a pause is longer. It's important to understand that the word pause, even though it sounds kind of short, can be as long as it takes to effectively drop the flame. Asking how long it takes to pause is something like asking how long is a piece of string. It depends. Sometimes it can be as brief as a few seconds. However, there are times when we need longer to drop the heat. It's important to realize that it will be difficult to get to the next stop or drop to the reflection until you are in a place of reason and calm. So take as long as you need. Remember though, we're not talking about avoiding the issue, pretending everything is just fine and brushing it over. That's not calm, that's repression, and you'll find out just how dangerous that is in chapter 4.
I remember once being angry and theoretically knowing I needed to pause so that I could progress to reflection. Seething, I muttered to my husband between clenched teeth, I've paused, but I'm far too angry to even want to get to the next step. The last thing I want to see is how it is for you. It was at this point I realized that all I really needed was more time out, more space to retreat and effectively drop the flame. My husband agreed. I went for a long walk, managed to calm down, and started to see things more clearly. A few hours later, we were able to talk rationally, and we were both ready to move into reflection. One size does not fit all. Sometimes just a brief pause is all that is needed, but at other times your pause may need to be longer. Again, pause does not mean we suppress our feelings, sweep it all under the rug, and pretend nothing happened. Using this calmer strength technique to pause and to keep calm in even the most difficult circumstances naturally grants the mind reprieve from its state of upset and allows you to regain your focus.
Be in your heart, not your head. Quote, the easiest way to please Krishna, simply you require your heart. Srila Prabhupada, class in Mayapur, 1977. In times of conflict, our greatest challenge is to learn how to be in our hearts and not in our heads, or as we used to preach to each other back in the old days, just get off the mental platform. Instead of heeding the ego-boosting ramblings of our mind, we will find peace and tranquility in the core of our hearts, where we hold our highest intentions, thoughts, and aspirations. To be able to quickly press our personal pause button, it's important to be able to first notice what's going on, first in our mind and body, and then learn to access our heart. This is where the Atma and Paramatma both reside. Krishna, as Super Soul, wants to direct our intelligence. In Bhagavad Gita, it's described that according to our desire, Krishna grants us knowledge, remembrance, or forgetfulness. When we are in the modes of passion and ignorance, we cannot access our higher self. When we learn to access the mode of goodness by learning to pause and listen, we will be able to hear and tune into our good intelligence and be empowered to make the best Krishna conscious decisions.
Seven ways to drop the flame. Now that you have understood the importance of this first step, the following strategies will aid you in this key principle of keeping your cool. We have given you a smorgasbord of strategies to choose from. Select the ones that resonate best with you and are most applicable in your circumstances. Call your best friend. Once Srila Prabhupada advised Haigrivadas to call out to Krishna when he was having trouble with Mr. Lust. So why shouldn't we call out to Krishna when we are having trouble with Mr. Lust's close friend, Mr. Anger? Too often we ignore our real best friend, Krishna. Changing our state or mode is all about taking shelter of Krishna. Although calling out to Krishna is sometimes the hardest thing to do, it is the ultimate state changer. At our own initiation ceremony in Melbourne of April 1976, Srila Prabhupada urged us to pray to Krishna whenever Maya tries to deviate us. Quote, so when there is some endeavor by Maya, just pray to Krishna, please save me. I am fully surrendered to you. Kindly give me protection, and Krishna will give you protection.
Take a deep breath. Slow and conscious deep breathing can also help you change your state, especially in the heat of the moment. When we get angry, our breath naturally shortens and becomes shallow and hard. Think of the anger of Dhruva Maharaj when he was insulted by his stepmother Suruchi. Anger induces short, sharp breathing, which tightens up the whole body. Deep breathing counteracts the fight or flight stress reaction that underlies anger. Deliberately taking slow, deep breaths not only brings a soothing sense of relaxation, but also helps us to bring our attention back to the present moment.
Get healthy. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Bhagavad Gita 6:17. It is also crucial that we nurture our material health as a powerful preventative measure. Self-care is both proactive and reactive in nature. It is something you need to do in advance to prepare yourself, as well as something you need to practice in the moment as part of this process. Rohini Nandana Das wrote an excellent article on the importance of keeping our health. You can find the complete article on the www.krishna.com website. Quote, Prabhupada would always sign his letters, "I hope this meets you in good health." He was concerned that his disciples lead a healthy life, including cleanliness, exercise, and a proper diet. When an early disciple became ill, Prabhupada advised him, "Your first business is to look after your health, because if you don't feel well, everything will be topsy-turvy." He would sometimes tell sick devotees to suspend their work and take complete rest. End of quote. Having vibrant health can help us achieve more emotional and social stability. It is favorable for the execution of our devotional service and should never be neglected or seen as maya. Anger can be a symptom of an overstressed system. One devotee related to us that whenever she tried to talk to her husband about important issues, he would become irritable and tense. What we found when working through the problem together with this couple was that the wife would always bring up these important issues just before bedtime. After a long day of physical work, her husband was totally exhausted, and the last thing he wanted or needed to hear was problems. As soon as they recognized this unhealthy pattern, the couple were able to proactively avoid conflict by making a better time to discuss their problems.
Become regulated. We cannot expect to be in a calm and peaceful state without the strength that steady daily sadhana gives us. If we are regulated and have strong sadhana, we will be predominantly influenced by sattva-gun. When things aren't going our way and anger attempts to rear its ugly head, our material frustrations and hankerings will not have the power to bother us as much. One essential key to keeping regulated is to make sure you get to bed early. If you don't get to bed early, there is little chance of waking up early, no rocket science there. When we get that early start, worshipping and chanting in the Brahma Muhurta hour, our whole day becomes auspicious. Quote, in the early morning hours, known as Brahma Muhurta, one should get up and immediately chant the Hare Krishna mantra, or at least Krishna, 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 end quote. In this way, one immediately becomes auspicious and transcendental to the infection of material qualities. One way to get up early is to trick the mind and tell yourself that you can have a power nap later in the day. Whether you get to the nap or not, you have defeated your mind and got yourself moving. Power naps of around 20 to 30 minutes can be energy building when needed. Be careful of long naps. It's all about those modes of nature again. When we sleep too much during the day, we will be more susceptible to the mode of ignorance. We also interrupt our natural body clock and end up staying up too late, which leads to, you guessed it, sleeping in the next morning. This late to bed, late to rise cycle is one that often delivers a death knell to good sadhana.
Head for the hills. While sorting out issues and being able to express how we feel is important, it is often counterproductive and downright dangerous when you are angry. Sometimes what we need is time out and a little breathing space in a more soothing environment. Changing our environment is a powerful aid to changing our state. If a brief respite is all you need to cool down, just go into the next room. When I was a child, my little sister would annoy me. I would find sanctuary hiding in a little used closet. It was my own private refuge, and I even had a torch hanging from a rope so that I could read all my books there in peace. So for me, when the temperature gets too hot and I need a solid pause, I usually head out the door. Ayurveda teaches that anywhere with water, like streams, rivers, or beaches, will help calm and soothe an agitated mind. Sometimes it's wise to proactively locate a few calm-inducing retreats near where you live. The most important point to remember when using a change of environment as a pause strategy is to never, never, and did I say never, leave with a parting flourish of anger. You will have to control yourself here and may need to white-knuckle it. No door slamming or explosive retreating remarks or gestures, because when you enter or when you exit in a temper tantrum, you will have automatically surrendered your power. The last impression your husband or wife will have to focus on is the angry state in which you left the house.
Get out the broomstick and shoes. There is a sound reason to heed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's allegorical advice that in the morning our first business is to beat the mind with shoes 100 times and before retiring 100 times with a broomstick. This does not mean, however, that we ruthlessly beat our minds up with a barrage of negative self-talk. The contemporary and popular term self-talk may sound a bit new agey, but have you, like me, ever noticed that there is always some kind of chatter going on in your mind? We do indeed self-talk. The elderly Gujarati Mahavishnu Goswami often joked that our mind is like a zoo. Once we recognize that we are constantly talking to ourselves, mostly in a negative way, we can consciously choose a more positive and empowering dialogue. Bhaktitirtha Swami illustrates the destructive nature of the mind's negative self-talk in his book, Spiritual Warrior. Quote, "People who always position themselves as the victim will never grow. They always think that the other people are hurting them in some way. Although it could be a reality, if they anticipate and look for it, they will just create that around them to an even greater extent. They'll begin to chant the same mantra in their minds. Somebody didn't treat me right. Someone didn't look at me right. Someone didn't address me right. Someone didn't take care of me properly. Someone used me improperly." Consequently, a person who always sees him or herself as the victim becomes the perpetual victim, because violence brings more violence. End quote. When you realize the huge impact your self-talk can make, resolve to use it as a more positive and encouraging force.
Visualize your way to success. Sitting on a park bench in New York City, Srila Prabhupada, in conversation with an acquaintance, stated, "We have so many temples, so many devotees, so many books. There is just some time separating us." Visualizations are similar to and often build upon self-talk. It's actually the art of transposing our positive self-talk into a vision. Like Srila Prabhupada on that park bench, we can use our minds to generate what we want and to actually visualize or see it happening. It is often quoted that the mind can be a friend or a powerful enemy of the conditioned soul. Intentional and positive visualizations can purposefully direct our mind and help us to achieve our goals. Self-talk and visualizations in action. I use both positive self-talk and visualizations in my teaching practice. I visualize all the activities I have prepared for the children going exactly according to plan. When I find myself stressing, I check in with what my mind is saying. If it's not positive, I catch myself and I change it. One day, I casually mentioned to a close friend how I was totally exhausted because some children in my class were draining me. "Can you hear yourself?" he said. It took me a few seconds to tune in to what he was saying. Then I got it. It became clear that I was letting this negative self-talk dictate my mood. I was accepting and preparing myself for a day of draining children. I even saw draining children in my head. Immediately I changed my mindset and dropped the draining word from my vocabulary. Instead, I chose to see those previously draining kids as lively and intelligent. I now visualized having fun with a group of lively, intelligent children. It made the world of difference to my mood and my day.
Okay, now I've calmed down. What next? Drop one, drop the flame works brilliantly to take the heat out of any upset. However, practicing how to pause is only the first of a five-drop process. It isn't meant to stand alone like some kind of miracle cure Rather, it provides us with an effective entry point to the next step, drop the vein. This is where we begin to consider the other person and how they are being impacted by what's happening. Key points from Chapter 1, Drop the Flame, Pause. Understand the importance of pause and you will be motivated to use it. The main point to remember here is that it is impossible to work through conflict when you are under the grip of anger. Recognize your specific triggers and patterns. Once you do, you will be able to put the brakes on and prevent yourself from going down that well-trodden path of conflict. Just as in our map problem example, you may realize that this is a negative pattern that you keep playing out. The difference is that with these new tools, you can finally do something about it. Know the real price of anger and why you really do lose it when you lose it. This is pivotal. Remember what you lose when you dance with anger. You lose your respect, your reasoning, and instead of focusing on the issue or problem at hand, your spouse will focus on and react to your anger. It is totally lose-lose. Understand and be motivated to practice calm as strength. You keep your power when you keep calm, even in the face of conflict. Once you fully realize this, you will be motivated to do whatever it takes to keep your cool. Pick and choose 7 ways to drop the flame. Try the ones that resonate with you first, then gradually experiment with them all.